So I know we got a lot to cover, a lot to cover here today. Adam Wynn in for Chris Brain. I'm Jeff Dantzler, 5 at 5, brought to you each and every day by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Adam, take it away.
All right, well, we're going to get to the open in a second, but I got another question for you. I want to throw this at you, and it may take a little explaining, but are there any non-retired numbers in UGA football history you can think of that are exclusive to one great player?
Yeah, that's a good one. Like, say, and I'm not great with jersey numbers, by the way. So I'm not. But was DJ Shockley three?
He was three.
He and Gurley were three.
Right.
Like, to me, five's one because it's Kevin Butler, Rex Robinson, Garrison Hurst, Hines Ward, and Scott Werner were both 19. You know, I'm trying to think. Just, you know, obviously Thomas Davis was 10, Tarkenton was 10, Andy Johnson might have been 12 or 14, but not really that I can think of where there was just one player who wore that number that really stood out. You know, the thing is, too, in football, you got so many guys after so many years.
Sure.
You better hope they're good players at every position. It's even like 47. That's an unusual number. That's David Pollard. Robert Edwards were 47.
Yeah.
That's a good question, though.
Yeah, that was just something I was thinking about the other day, and I figured if anybody would know, you'd be the guy.
Yeah, but I am – if I'm Superman when it comes to Georgia history, knowledge, and all, that lead jersey numbers, that's kind of like – you know, Superman couldn't see through lead.
Right.
That's kind of jersey numbers. I'm just not real good with jersey numbers.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
But moving along anyway, we will now get to the open. And a question I think we know the answer to, but I want to get your thoughts on this. Did Spieth's finish at the Open do enough to prove to you that he is beyond his Masters meltdown?
I think it was a huge step in that direction. And here's the thing. You're never going to forget that.
No.
I mean, he could win seven Masters, and it's going to be, I should have had eight.
Yes.
But, again, I think for him, and he knows the history of the game, and I think to understand that it's happened to everybody. And Jack Nicklaus has even talked about early in his career – he could have won the 1960 U.S. Open as an amateur. He probably should have won the 1963 British Open, but wasn't as aware of the scoreboard as he should have been. And Nicklaus's attitude, and this another reason why he's the best ever, was that's never going to happen to me again. So now for Spieth, the next time it was about to happen to him again. So for him to prevent that, you know, now you talk about it and what Tiger did in terms of majors, I mean, Nicklaus's mark will never be broken. It skewed things. I think what people have to understand is that five or six is an enormous amount for a career.
Sure.
That's a ton. Like my man Watson won eight. That's the sixth most in history. That's a ton. That's a ton.
Quite a bit.
So, but now for Spieth, you know, I think certainly he's put himself in a spot where could he get to six or seven? Yeah. He
sure
could. Could he win the career Grand Slam? Yes. I mean, he's finished second at a PGA, and he's won the other three.
Yeah. One away. That's all he's got to do.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that's, you know, only five guys have won all four. So it's extremely tough to do. And you know, Tom Watson and Arnold Palmer both missed the PGA. Both had big leads and won and had it get away. But it wouldn't surprise me if Spieth won it. It wouldn't surprise me if he never won it. I mean, I remember – when Tiger and Ernie Els and Phil Mickelson were all coming around, I said all three of those guys have the games to win the career Grand Slam. Well, only one of them did. Hmm. And Mickelson won three legs and came darn close at the U.S. Open several times. Els won two legs and came darn close at the Masters and the PGA. I think Spieth's got the game for it. I think Jason Day and McIlroy have got the game for it. Now, Spieth and McIlroy have got three quarters of it done. Now it's just a matter of going out and doing it. But I think for him, big picture, kind of back to the root of your question, I think the next time, if there is a next time, and since he's won three by age 23, when and if he does have the lead in a major again, those demons, that scar tissue is still going to be there from Augusta. But this was one sweet Band-Aid to put on top of that open wound.
Yeah, if there, that's a great way to get over it, especially I think the way he did it, by getting behind and having a bad shot, and then being able to turn it around and come back and make the shot he needed to make, do the things he needed to do to not just keep a lead, but regain the lead. And I think that finish. Since you mentioned Mickelson, I'm curious on your thought on this. Does he have Do you think he could still get the career?
No, I can't see it at a U.S. Open. I would think the only possibility, especially as he's gotten older, and I think Phil's 47 now, maybe at Pebble Beach in 2 years, because he's won there 4 or 5 times, and it's not going to be hot, the course familiarity, maybe. But I kind of thought 2013 at Marion was his last shot. He had 2 awful wedge shots. But, you know, another thing, too, is like we talked about winning that first one. Yeah, and Payne Stewart deserved the one that he won in 99. But, you know, if he doesn't make the putt, had Phil won there, or if Phil had a chance to win it in 04, if he doesn't blow it in 06 to Ogilvy, if he just wins one of those, he's probably got 2 or 3 of them, but that first one can be the hardest to win, mm-hmm. as we all know. So that's the thing with Spieth, and Jack Nicklaus has talked about that too, what he was able to do to win that U.S. Open when he was 22. Then Nicklaus, the next year at 23, won the Masters and the PGA. So he had gotten 3/4 of the slam, and just to get those monkeys off the back. Mm-hmm. And Arnold Palmer said it in that great piece, Jack, that the Golf Channel ran after the Masters. When Nicklaus beat Palmer at the playoff in 1962 at Oakmont, he said, "The cage is open. Everybody had better watch out." So for Spieth, he's not going to have that kind of career. But Arnold Palmer, who probably did more for the game of golf than any player ever, he won 7 major championships and was about 5 inches away from having 10 to 13 of them. Could Jordan Spieth get to 7? He could.
Yeah.
He could.
Well, I think we're at the point with Spieth's career that it's almost detrimental to start projecting numbers of his maximum wins or maximum majors. Because,
yeah,
like you said, it's hard to get even 1. It's hard to get 2, and now he's got 3. I mean,
yep,
every major is. It's difficult.
Well, again, getting that first one is the hardest. Then the next one is the second toughest. And then it's like, okay, well, now I want to go out and win another one. Now he's won that first British Open. And, you know, so if he does contend again at the PGA Championship, you know, this just isn't like everybody else in the field, he's going to want to win it. You know,
that's
the thing. You go there, oh, boy, did you really want to win that second straight Masters to join Faldo, Woods, and Nicklaus? Like, well, yeah, like every other player in the field, you want to win the thing. But he's now put himself in the position that the next time he is leading a major or he's got a shot at it, he knows how to win it. And he also knows that he can come back if things don't go that way, or if you do blow it, or if somebody just outplays you and beats you down the stretch like Stenson did with Mickelson, that, you know what, I can recover from this.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to momentarily interrupt the 5 at 5 because we have a tweet from the Braves here about a trade, so I want to go ahead and throw this out there.
All right.
A guy who brought in 6 runs in his last game, Jaime Garcia, has now been traded to the Minnesota Twins, along with catcher Anthony Recker and cash considerations. And the Braves have acquired a right-handed pitcher whose name I am going to butcher, so I completely apologize.
Is it Johan Santana? Is it Frank Viola?
No,
is it
it's
Jack
worse,
Morris?
It's worse than that.
Oh.
It is.
Well, I mean, those are some of the great Twins pitchers ever.
Yeah, it's Huascar Wainoa.
Okay.
Huascar, first name, last name Wainoa. So I am probably
Y-N-O-A, that's Yona.
Oh, okay.
I would guess.
That makes sense, I guess. But so yeah, they have traded Garcia and Recker and cash to bring in this new pitcher from the Twins, along with recalling Matt Whistler from AAA Gwinnett. So,
you know, Whistler's a guy, and I don't watch the Braves a ton. I did watch a good bit of the game yesterday, but Whistler's one of those guys. Just in the limited time I watched him, I liked him. I like the way he threw the ball. I don't know what his problem's been, why he got bumped down. You know, it's not always easy. Sometimes the book gets around.
It does.
I saw Newcomb pitch earlier this year. I thought he was good.
Yeah, so, he's been frustrating to watch.
I know
as
he
of
had
late,
a bad month. That's what Brain was saying. He had a bad month.
He did. He's had a bad month.
But for me, you know, I'm totally talking about me here, not anybody else cares, but I'm so in that Georgia baseball vortex that, like, when our season's over, really the last thing I want to do is sit down and look at baseball.
Oh, I'm with you.
I get it. And the problem is then, like, the last couple of years, when you do kind of like, all right, I've let my brain recuperate here from just living in it for every day for several months, and you do flip it on, the Braves have either been out of contention or not interested.
Absolutely.
So yeah. It's hard to really get locked in on him.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say about this this new guy, he is the he's listed as the 14th best international prospect, or he was listed okay. as such in 2014, according to Baseball America.
And he's a right-handed pitcher.
Yep. So
never have enough arms.
No. And that's been the Brave strategy lately, is just to bring in as many pitchers as possible. But with that being said, we're going to jump back to the 5-5 here. Just want to let folks know that that had just come in.
All right. That is what we call breaking news.
Yes.
Boy, Adam, give yourself 42 pats on the back at 42 Cobras.
But anyway, moving right along here, I know you travel a lot. You've been to several places. So I'm going to – you can't say Athens here. We're just going to take it off the board. But other than Athens, what is the best food town you have ever been to?
Well, I mean, you've got big cities like New York, Chicago, San Francisco that are just fantastic. Fort Worth, Texas.
Okay.
Back when I was eating red meat, the steaks were impeccable. And they do the cattle drive right through downtown.
Yeah.
So, and the Mexican food there, there's a famous place. It was also the great Dan Jenkins' favorite place called Joe T. Garcia's.
I think I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, I could go from, I'm probably sitting around 250 right now. I could go to three bills in about a week if I lived there's a place called Risky's Barbecue right downtown. I mean, it is... Let's just say there's not a lot of salads in the diet in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah, and if there are, they're being eaten by the cows.
Yes, yes.
Man, I've never been to Fort Worth, but I can just imagine, like, with the steak. And,
it's unbelievable.
Oh, man, I love
steak.
Steak,
barbecue, Mexican food.
Yeah, there's some good stuff there, and about none of it is healthy. But
No, it's all good for you.
Sure, we'll go with that. Moving along here, and this is something we both kind of talked about during the break, but... Is there a single pro athlete who is as underappreciated as Larry Fitzgerald?
I would say if you're talking about all-time greats, there might not be, because he has had the skill, he's had the ability, and when he had Kurt Warner and then when he had Carson Palmer, and even in between, he was still that good.
Oh, yeah.
Just who in the world was going to throw him the football? But I was happy for him that when he did get thrust on that national stage – the game he had against the Steelers in the Super Bowl with those two long touchdowns, he showed what he could do. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Rice, greatest wide receiver ever. There's no way to even argue that. Since him, you could make a case for Moss. Maybe he was more talented. But as far as an all-around receiver, Fitzgerald gets my vote. And I thought there was a time, especially when they had Warner, there was about a 2 or 3 year period where I felt like, if you were looking at the best player at his position in football, say if it was quarterback, whether you wanted to go Brady or Manning, whether it was running back, if you wanted to go, gosh, I don't even know. I guess Adrian Peterson was the best. If you can think of another good back in 07, 08. I can't off the top of my head.
It was AP, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Or if you wanted to go with the best offensive lineman, Walter Jones, Steve Hutchinson, whoever it may be, that I thought the biggest gap between one and whoever number two was that wide receiver, that Fitzgerald was that good.
Yeah.
And he certainly is one of the best. And he's literally the total package. He's got the hands. He's got the speed. He knows how to run the routes. And he's just got that sixth sense of how to get the feet down inbounds.
Oh, yeah.
How to find that hole in the zone. How to split a seam. I know you talk about big plays. And in his Arizona, they got younger and were so talented. When they had that comeback in overtime, when he was basically the number three option after Green Bay when Rodgers hit the Hail Mary a couple of years ago, and then Fitzgerald has a 76-yarder right on top of that. Just great instincts right up the seam. So, yeah, I've always been a Fitzgerald fan. Plus, his dad was a sports writer. So, hey. Gives guys like, hey, I could have a Hall of Famer too one day. That's right. So how about for you? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think Fitzgerald, I'm glad to see he is getting a little bit more notoriety, but it feels like, we have these conversations at sports so often about legacy, and especially I think more so in basketball because it is a very individualistic sport. There's just five guys on the court, so each one contributes a little bit more.
Right. But, it's a numbers game.
Sure. But in football, we still can have those conversations. What is this player's legacy if they haven't won a Super Bowl or if they haven't contributed to that team? Larry Fitzgerald has done about as much as anybody without actually winning the Super Bowl. Now, there you could go through and name some other guys who have been right there. Right now, you've got almost like Julio Jones and Matt Ryan are right on the cusp of being, they've been there, they've done a lot, but they haven't got it done yet. But there are so many great players who've at least gotten their one, and you feel like Fitzgerald's probably not going to at this point. Nobody's really looking at Arizona as a contender.
No, they had their window, and yeah. That's the thing in the NFL. You know, when you have that window and you miss it.
You've got to capitalize.
Because I really thought they had the best team 2 years ago. Carolina beat them. You know, Carolina deserved to play at home.
Sure.
The weather was in Carolina's favor. Had that game been played in Arizona, they probably would have won. But it's like Brayman and I talked, you got to have the luck as well. You know, had Seattle not lost to Arizona last year, I don't know if the Falcons go out to Seattle and win that playoff game to get to the championship game.
It certainly wouldn't have been as wide as it was.
Right.
I mean,
you'd have had to have favored Seattle. So, you know, you got to have the breaks. But you're right. You know, he's one of those guys, and I appreciate him being so loyal to Arizona and wanting him to be that Cardinal.
Yes.
But he's a guy, too, that if they felt like they didn't really have a chance, that you wouldn't mind seeing show up maybe to have a last hurrah, kind of like, even though the Falcons didn't make it, kind of like Tony Gonzalez had that shot with Atlanta.
Absolutely. And I loved Tony Gonzalez's tenure in Atlanta.
I would have
loved to have. I mean, can you imagine having Julio and Larry Fitzgerald on the same line? That would be incredible.
Yeah, Fitzgerald to the Falcons. Atlanta needs more weapons.
Yeah, that's not really right now, but it would still be fantastic. I would do quite a bit to see that happen. One last question for you, and obviously last night, I don't know if you got to see it, but last night was the much talked about Michael Phelps versus a great white shark special.
I love Shark Week. And I watched the thing on Hammerheads last night.
That was pretty cool.
Yep, and I'll definitely be dialed in tonight. But you knew the great white was going to win, and they weren't even obviously they weren't in the water at the same time. I mean, hey, good luck. Tell you what, you better be faster.
Yeah.
Or you're going to be lunch.
But yeah, I have to admit it was actually much more interesting than I thought it was going to be, and it was a lot closer than I thought it was going to be if you watched it. But I have to ask, if you had the opportunity to enter a competition with an animal, mm-hmm. what would you want to do?
I love dogs. I'd probably just get in a petting contest with a bunch of cute dogs there. But I couldn't outrun a horse.
No.
I certainly would not want to try and outswim a shark.
No.
Yeah, Bear Bryant got his nickname?
Because he wrestled a bear.
Yeah. I would not want to wrestle a bear.
Certainly it wasn't a full-size bear. Like, there's no way.
I don't know. That's just part of it. That's just part of it. I'm not good at climbing trees, so I couldn't really go with a raccoon with anything. I don't want to box a kangaroo. I love kangaroos, so... Yeah, I don't know. Do you have anything in mind, a contest you'd like to do with an animal?
Well, not really. I told my wife last night when we were watching that. I said, you know what, I think I'll challenge a shark to a race. I'll challenge him to 5K.
There you go, on land.
Yeah,
I like my chances there.
Put him in the outside lane, put me in the inside lane, see what happens.
Yeah, I'm trying to – I'll tell you what, I feel bad. I don't know, when you'll see him in the pond, like if you're driving through rural Georgia, heading south – and you see, and, oh, it's about 5 o'clock, and that sun's baking. Those poor cows are just standing outside, just baking, trying to find their way into a pond. But yeah, that's rough. That farm living.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen cow races?
No.
They are interesting to watch because they're not very fast, but they're fast enough that it's interesting.
Now, Bulldogs great Bill Stanfield, the late great Bill Stanfield, he told the story about how growing up on a farm really helped him. She had to get strong when it came to handling pigs and cows and all. And he said literally, he chasing chickens around and all that, that it really helped him growing up on a farm.
No,
I don't know if there's any animal I could outrun anymore. Maybe when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's so tough. And these animal man versus beast competitions are always, they're interesting and they're fun television. But for the most part, you know, the people don't have a chance.
Come on.
Now, the thing I loved about the Michael Phelps special was that they gave him this specialized fin that was supposed to kind of help give him a little boost to make him more like the shark's body type, I guess.
Yeah, so it was like he had like a unifin.
Right.
Both feet in there, yeah.
It was actually kind of interesting. Like, that's why I was saying, like, they made this special more interesting than I really thought it was going to be, because I thought it was just going to be a lot like the old kind of the hokey man versus beast things we used to see on TV.
Right.
But it wasn't.
There's what I think, even like, and I get it, to make money, I understand. I think like Jesse Owens raced against a horse.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, you know, I get it. You're trying to make money, but
No, you're not going to beat a horse.
No, I understand.
No.
And I wouldn't want to be like when the Romans fed the Christians to the lions. We'd lose that one, too. Yeah, that was
generally being fed to a lion is not a competition you're going to come out on the better end of.
Yeah, that's a one-way ticket. Or like I always love, I have a lot of friends who deer hunt and a lot of people who don't like it. Well, give the deer a gun. Give them a fighting chance at it there. So, yeah.
Well, wasn't there a story a little while back about a guy whose dog actually did accidentally shoot him?
Oh, I'm sure. I like those farmers insurance commercials, like where the dog was peeking up over the windshield and hits the gear shift and off takes the car.
Yeah, those are fun. So,
that's good stuff. I'm going to try not to be attacked by any wild animals, though. It's good stuff, Adam, as always.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.